You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Wednesday, June 23rd, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, we will recap what was another Orioles loss, although this one a lot closer as they fell 3-1 to the Astros on Tuesday night, give you the five things you need to know from the game. Then we will talk about the exciting roster move that the Orioles made on Tuesday afternoon before yesterday's game, calling up Mickey Janis, the knuckleballer, and he will make his major league debut whenever he gets into a game. We also talk about the corresponding move, which was DFAing Max Soroller. And then finally, we go through some Orioles news and notes with some injury updates on guys like Cesar Valdez, Bruce Zimmerman, and some updates on some current and former Orioles minor leaguers as well, along with previewing tonight's Game 3 between the O's and the Stros. But that's all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join me every week to talk Orioles and get in on the action. It's Spotify Green Room, changing the way we talk sports. So we start today with a recap and the five things you need to know from the Orioles' 3-1 loss to the Houston Astros at Camden Yards on Tuesday night, as the Stros have taken the first two of three in this series, and the Orioles, with another loss here, which is their fourth straight, have now dropped to 23-50 on the season. They are now the second team to 50 losses here in the 2021 Major League Baseball season. And with the five things to know, we start with the guy who really shined for the Orioles in this game. Maybe the only guy who shined for the Orioles in this game. And that was the starting pitcher, Jorge Lopez, who you could argue maybe had his best start of 2021 in this game. Lopez ends up going 6 1/3, charged with 2 runs on 5 hits. He struck out 6, walked 2, and allowed 1 home run, throwing 95 pitches. And he dropped his ERA to 5.68. on the season. Now, for Lopez, it was the first time this season he had pitched into the 7th inning. The last time he had done it was when he threw 7 innings against the Braves back in September of 2020. And he was really, really good in this one. I mentioned the home run. You know, he gives up a solo home run in the top of the 2nd to Miles Straw on a ball that, I mean, it was initially called a double. It was reviewed. Austin Hayes almost robbed it in left field, barely got out for kind of a cheapy Camden Yards solo homer that put the Astros up 1-0 in the 2nd. And then the only other run he gives up, you know, he comes back out there. He's running around 85 pitches through 6 innings, comes back out there in the 7th, and he gets a ground out to the first batter of the inning. And then he allows a infield single, kind of a tough luck infield single in that one. It was really bang-bang play at first on a ground ball to shortstop, leaves the game with a runner on first and one out. Hunter Harvey comes in. He allows a base hit to right that DJ Stewart made a diving attempt, probably should have kept it in front of him, bounces by him, allows the runner to score from first on a play that many outfielders would have caught and other outfielders would have let just drop in for a base hit. And so those were the two runs, the only two runs that came in against Lopez. And frankly, he was really, really good in this game. You know, I mentioned he goes 95 pitches. He mixed his pitches better than we have seen him mix his pitches all year. It was actually really, really interesting to see what he did. He went 33% curveballs. And then, you know, he really had a difference in his sinker and his four-seamer. 26% sinkers, 21% four-seamers, and 20% changeups. There wasn't a pitch that he threw less than 19 times. And the 31 knuckle curves, I believe, to be the most of that pitch that he has thrown this season. It was really interesting. Now, he only got 5 whiffs on 95 pitches, 2 with the curveball, 3 with the changeup. But he threw a whole lot of strikes on these pitches, had a 38% CSW. Lopez looked really, really good. And I got to tell you, he did plenty to keep himself in the rotation after he had struggled a little bit lately. I really liked what I saw out of Jorge Lopez. And, you know, he had a chance to maybe get through 7 if that infield grounder that ended up being a base hit with 1 out in the 7th, if Galvis makes that play, you know, he's got 2 outs, nobody on. And, you know, he could have gotten through that inning and that line would have looked a whole lot better. But I was really impressed with Lopez. He controlled that curveball well. He was throwing a lot of strikes, which is big. I think he could definitely build off of this one. But Second thing you do need to know from the Orioles loss is that Tanner Scott went kind of back into a little bit of walk mode and a little bit of lack of control mode in this game. Now, Scott entered the game with two on and two outs in the seventh. It was a 2-1 Astros lead. Hunter Harvey had already allowed the Jorge Lopez runner to score. He let a couple base runners on. He left. And Tanner Scott got a key strikeout to get out of that jam, keep it 2-1. And then, you know, he comes right back out in the top of the eighth inning. You know, it's a perfect place for him. Brantley, Gurriel, and Alvarez do up. Two lefties there right in the middle of the Astros order. Perfect spot for Tanner Scott. And he just wasn't throwing strikes. Allows a leadoff single, then another hit, and then a walk. And all of a sudden, bases loaded and nobody out. And he didn't look like he had his best command of his pitches, and he just couldn't find the zone. But the third thing you need to know from the game is the relievers after Scott did just a heck of a job to keep the Orioles in this one. Cole Sulcer enters that game, bases loaded, nobody out, Orioles trailing 2-1 in the top of the eighth inning, and Sulcer does an incredible job. He gets a strikeout, then there was a sac fly from Chaz McCormick, but then he gets a ground out to Miles Straw, keeps it to just one run, leaves in a 3-1 game. And then Tyler Wells pitches the ninth, 1-2-3 with two strikeouts, just 12 pitches thrown by Wells. I mean, the Astros hitters were nowhere close to him. I mean, you know, he made Jose Altuve look foolish in that inning. Tyler Wells, after, you know, giving up the runs when he entered with the bases loaded in the ninth inning on Saturday, rebounded from that outing. He continues to look really, really good for the Orioles on the mound. Fourth thing you need to know is that, you know, Cedric Mullins had an 0-for-3 in this game, but of course he was still a guy who drove in the only Oriole run. It came up with runners on first and third and one out in the third inning, and hit a line drive to center field. Looked like it was going to be a base hit. Miles Straw made a nice diving catch to rob him of a hit, but still was a sac fly. Pedro Severino tagged and scored on the play to tie the game at one. And although he had an 0-for again, Cedric gets himself another RBI and did have two hard hit balls on the day, two lineouts, despite not getting a hit. And the fifth and final thing that you need to know from the Orioles 3-1 loss to the Houston Astros on Tuesday night is that the luck might be changing even more than we thought for Ryan Mountcastle. Now, you know, early in the year when his numbers were down, Mountcastle was kind of even putting together some games where he would hit the ball hard and he just wouldn't be rewarded. You know, he'd have an 0-for-4 with, you know, two or three hard hit balls. But now we've seen him really heat up, you know, winning AL Player of the Week a couple weeks ago, having the great weekend, you know, with the three-homer game over the weekend. And then he, you know, kind of got rewarded with some luck on his side in this game. Ryan Mountcastle was the only Oriole with a multi-hit game. He went 2-for-4 in Tuesday night's loss, but he didn't have any hard hit balls. He kind of got two hits that came right off the end of the bat. One he dunked into left field and one he dunked into right field. And, you know, if you're Ryan Mountcastle, those two hits got to make you feel good because you didn't really hit the ball too hard in this game, but you got rewarded with a couple of hits. And now, you know, you're heating up, you're hitting the homers, and, you know, these little bloop shots are finding holes. That's got to help for the confidence, and I'm just excited to see Ryan Mountcastle continue this season. The numbers for him just continue to go up and up, and he looks like he's back to the hitter he was for the Orioles in 2020. But that's how it happened. Astros win it 3-1 over the O's. They've now taken the first two of this three-game series. But it really felt like even bigger news than the game on Tuesday was the move the Orioles made before the game. That was calling up Mickey Janis, the 33-year-old knuckleballer who has never pitched in the majors before. He was called up, added to the 40-man roster, and put on the active roster. Didn't pitch Tuesday, but whenever he does make his debut, it will be his major league debut. Orioles fans have been calling to see Mickey Janis for a long time. It is finally going to happen. So they call him up and they DFA the struggling Rule 5 pick, Max Soroller. We'll talk about that move, what it means for Janis, what it means for Soroller, and what it means for the Orioles coming up after the break. We'll get back to the Orioles talk in just a second, but first, this episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. The app is free to download, and once you're in, you can talk with me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. I'll be hosting rooms for Locked On Orioles once a week, and you can finally join in on the conversation that you listen to here every day. You'll find fans just like you at Spotify Green Room for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and of course, reacting to big news or rumors. So be sure to join me every week. Usually host a room on Spotify Green Room to talk about the Orioles. So go download the free app now, currently available on all iOS devices. Be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter, and join the MLB group for the latest league updates. And follow me at Connor Newcomb to be notified when my room goes live. I know you won't want to miss it. I'm planning to be live every single week to talk Orioles, and can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts on the O's. So see you there at Spotify Green Room, changing the way we talk sports. And today's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is also brought to you by Wealthfront. Stonks, memes, rocket ships, day trading can be a lot of fun. But if you want to grow your long-term wealth and make it to the moon, you should open up a Wealthfront investment account today. Wealthfront can create a portfolio of globally diversified, low-cost index funds personalized just for you in minutes. There's no manual trades, no picking stocks, and no watching the stock market every day. They automatically handle it all. And Wealthfront is trusted with over $20 billion of assets, and you can get your first $5,000 managed for free by going to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB. All you need is just $500 to get started. So to get your first $5,000 managed for free for life, go to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB. That's WealthFront.com/lockedonMLB to start growing your savings. One more time, go to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB and get started today. So on Tuesday evening, about 2 hours before first pitch of Game 2 of the series between the Orioles and the Astros, Orioles Twitter and Orioles fans, it seemed like collectively, were pretty much the happiest they had been since John Means threw his no-hitter against the Mariners all the way back on May 5th, so almost 2 months ago at this point. And no, it wasn't because the Orioles, you know, had snapped their long road losing streak. No, it wasn't because of Adley Rutschman getting called up to the big leagues. And no, it wasn't because, you know, the Orioles had finally cut bait with Chris Davis or something like that. But they had made a roster move that a lot of fans were calling for, but maybe not in the most serious way. It was kind of more of a, let us see this guy to help us enjoy what has been kind of an abysmal season so far for the Orioles. And the Orioles did it late on Tuesday afternoon. They called up the 33-year-old right-hander Mickey Janis to the big league roster. And, you know, you're thinking a 33-year-old right-hander making his big league debut. What's so exciting about that? Well, of course, Mickey Janis is a knuckleballer, and this makes him the only active knuckleballer in Major League Baseball. And, you know, since the Orioles signed him to a minor league deal, people have been calling for it, and it finally happened for Mickey Janis on Tuesday, getting that call up. And, you know, it's been so cool since the O's signed him, because I think most people have really, really wanted this to happen for Mickey Janis. Again, you know, kind of a smaller guy, just 5'9", you know, 33 years old. It's been a while for him. He was a Rays 44th round pick back in 2010. Yes, 44 rounds. A couple years after that, they actually dropped the draft down to 40 rounds. It's 20 rounds this year. He was drafted in the 44th round, pick 1,331 out of Cal State Bakersfield by the Tampa Bay Rays. And of course, you know, he never made it to the big leagues with the Rays. And, you know, he was bounced around really a lot in multiple different organizations. He was, you know, with Tampa for a while, and then he ended up with the Mets organization. They signed him to a minor league contract in 2015 after the Rays released him. And he stuck around in the Mets org, you know, through the 2019 season. Then January of 2020, the Orioles signed him to a minor league contract. Of course, minor league season gets shut down. He doesn't get to pitch in 2020. But here is Mickey Janis. And so we just wanted to kind of talk about Janis, a little bit about his journey. Of course, we did an episode about him last year, but wanted to kind of update you on Mickey getting to the big leagues, because he is really here. And first, we got to talk about, you know, what he did in Norfolk this year to earn this promotion to the big leagues. And that's where we got to start, because, you know, this isn't just because, oh, let's see a knuckleballer. You know, this will be kind of a gimmick to get butts in the seats. Eh, maybe a little bit, but he also earned this promotion. Mickey Janis, at the AAA Norfolk level, pitched in 7 games. He made 1 start, but he mostly worked as a long reliever out of the Tides bullpen. And in 24 and two-thirds innings this year, he had a 2.92 ERA. Like, it was working for Mickey Janis here at the AAA level with the Orioles. He allowed 21 hits in 24 and two-thirds. He struck out 13. He walked 10, but again, you know, that's something you expect sometimes from knuckleballers. And he allowed 8 earned runs in that amount of time, hit 1 batter, and that's what the numbers, you know, have looked like, a 1.26 whip as well. Now, I don't expect, you know, him to look like peak R.A. Dickey or even look like Tim Wakefield or, you know, more recent guys like Stephen Wright with the Red Sox when he was at his best, but He's earned this promotion, and it's awesome to see him up in the big leagues. Now, you know, before the Orioles, he was pitching in really Double A with the Mets. You know, he really couldn't even find his footing in Triple A. This was really his first Triple A season, which, you know, is kind of surprising for as long as he's been around. In 2018, he made two Triple A starts with the Mets. In 2019, he also made two Triple A starts with the Mets. But basically both of those years, he was essentially in the Double A rotation for the entire year and made a couple of spot starts. And his Double A or Triple A numbers, I should say, with the Mets were horrendous. In 2018, two starts, he allowed 13 runs in 8 innings on 17 hits. 2019, two starts, he allowed 21 runs on 19 hits in 6 2/3 innings. That is a 22.95 ERA. But he figured out how to pitch in AAA this year. It worked out, and here he is. And, you know, you want to look at what he's done recently for the Norfolk Tides. He has pitched fairly well, you know, in the month of June. His last time out there was his first and only start in AAA so far. That was against the Durham Bulls, you know, with obviously Wander Franco, who's making his debut now at the big leagues, and Vidal Brujan and other great Rays prospects in that lineup. 5 innings, 2 runs, 6 hits, 3 Ks, 1 walk, and 1 home run allowed in that game. The outing before that against the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp on June 8th, 2 1/3 scoreless in relief, 2 hits, a K, and 3 walks, but he worked around them. And, you know, it's been pretty solid for Mickey Janis. And then, you know, he's even had some really interesting outings as well. Back on May 20th against Jacksonville, he pitched 5 perfect innings. No hits, no walks, also no strikeouts in that outing. He was just kind of getting weak contact off the knuckleball. So he can do that as well. And so, you know, I'm excited to see, you know, we don't know how long he'll stick around in the majors at this point with the Orioles, but, you know, they had to put him on the 40-man roster to get him here. And he does have options, obviously, because this is his major league debut. So, you know, we could see Mickey Janis a few different times. And, you know, it's just an exciting thing. I mean, the Orioles are bad. We know. You know, they haven't even reached 25 wins at this point in the season. They're playing bad baseball. You got to have something to watch. And, you know, I don't think he'll make a start. And he might get a chance to start. But, you know, at this point, at the time of this recording, you know, we don't know exactly what his role will be. You would think, you know, some sort of mop-up relief, long relief role. And even if you get that, and even if Mickey Janis comes in and the Orioles are, you know, down 9-2 in the 7th inning when he enters, it's going to make people turn on the game. And at least that's something for Mickey Janis. But again, it's not just a sideshow. He earned it. A 2.92 ERA in 25 innings. That is earning it to finally get to the big leagues. And what a great thing for Mickey Janis, who has really grinded through independent ball and through the minors, and to finally get here at the big league level. But of course, you know, the Orioles had to make a move. You know, you add somebody to the big league roster, you add somebody to the 40-man roster, you have to make a move. And this was a move that I think a lot of people saw coming for a few different reasons. But the Orioles, to make room, DFA'd the right-handed pitcher, Max Soroller. And, of course, we know Max Soroller as the 26-year-old right-hander who was selected by the Orioles in the first round of this winter's Rule 5 draft. One of the two pitchers the Orioles selected. And, of course, they took Tyler Wells in the second round as well. It has not been good for Max Soroller. His stats on the season, he pitched in just 5 games out of the bullpen, ended up going 7 2/3 innings, allowing 15 runs, 12 of them earned on 15 hits. He struck out 11, he walked 7, he hit a batter, and he gave up 6 home runs in 7 2/3 innings. That was a 14.09 ERA for Soroller. And, you know, again, you can argue, what kind of sample size is that? 5 games, 7 2/3 innings, you know, 7 2/3 innings, that's for some guys, you know, one start. You know, he was coming out of the bullpen, but not a lot of sample size. And, you know, he was injured. We saw him for 2 games in April, and then he went on the injured list, and he basically missed 2 months before he returned from the IL a couple of weeks ago. And so, you know, we've barely seen him as he went on with some shoulder issues. But for Max Soroller, you know, you could also make the argument that, hey, you know, Tyler Wells was pretty bad at the beginning of the year, too. The Orioles were hiding him and barely pitching him, and he was getting lit up when he pitched. Now we look at Tyler Wells. He's been fantastic in the month of June, and he's one of the Orioles' best relievers right now. So you could argue, hey, why don't you give Max Soroller that same chance? Well, some of it has to do with the injury. You know, you're worried about that injury still bugging him. Some of it has to do with the fact that even though Wells was bad, Soroller has still been worse in the small sample size. And I think the big thing that the Orioles have done here is, you know, they made two Rule 5 selections. It's really tough to keep two Rule 5 guys on your roster the entire year because you have to keep them either on the IL or the active roster the whole year or you lose them. And when you don't trust the guys, it's hard to keep them. Now, it's much easier for the Orioles with Wells because now they trust him out of the bullpen, so it's easy to keep him on the roster, but it's not so much for Soroller. And you had to know at the beginning of the year, when you usually take two Rule 5 guys, rarely do teams keep both. They usually at least get rid of one of those guys. And I think that was the scenario. We just kind of thought that one of these guys would, you know, get the boot. And most people thought it would be Max Soroller that would get the boot. And that is how it happened. And, you know, I know he is Ben McDonald's nephew, but it just couldn't keep him around. The stuff just did not look good. He didn't throw a lot of strikes. He, you know, when he did, he was in the middle of the plate. It just wasn't major league ready stuff. And it didn't look as projectable as Tyler Wells looked even when he was struggling. And I think the emergence of Tyler Wells is really the big reason this happened. Because you feel like Tyler Wells is good now, you found something in Wells. Not only is he a good reliever, but we're starting to think, you know, could Tyler Wells be in the Orioles rotation by next year with how well he's pitching? You kind of look at these two Rule 5 drafts and you say, okay, we've gotten Tyler Wells. We've gotten a pretty good pitcher, it looks like, out of the Rule 5 draft. Going 1-for-2 and getting a good player, you'll take that every time in the Rule 5 drafts, and that makes Soroller expendable. And to be quite honest with you, you know, you can see how expendable he was because it's not like the Orioles, you know, DFA'd him because they had to. You know, it's not like they claimed a pitcher off waivers who they really wanted, or they, you know, added a prospect like a Kyle Bradish or someone, you know, or even somebody better to the 40-man roster and they had to make a move to get him off. Or, you know, someone was coming back from a long injury and they had to clear up a spot. There was really nothing forcing the Orioles to add a 33-year-old knuckleballer to the 40-man roster. They just wanted to and really wanted to get Max Soroller off the team, and that's how bad it was for him. And so it looks like, you know, most likely he will be returned to the Reds if he passes through waivers. And that's going to be most likely the case with a 14 ERA, which means he'll go back into the Reds system where the Orioles drafted him out of in the Rule 5 draft. We wish him the best. We know he'll still have that Orioles connection being Ben McDonald's nephew, but it just didn't work for Soroller. His loss is Mickey Janis's gain and really his Orioles fans' gains is we're going to get to see a knuckleball at the major league level. He's going to get hit a little bit. Just be ready for that. But there's going to be some fun moments to watch the knuckler as well. But when we do come back, we're going to finish up here on the pod. We're going to get you a couple more Orioles news and notes that came out before Tuesday's game. And then quickly preview the final game of this three-game series between the Orioles and the Astros. That is all coming up after the break. So we'll finish up with some Orioles news and notes in just a second, but first got to tell you about Built Bar and the 9 delicious flavors of those fantastic protein bars. Now you've got coconut almond, you've got cherry, raspberry, then there's my personal favorite, peanut butter brownie. But I know some of you maybe haven't picked a favorite, whether you haven't tried all the flavors yet or maybe you're brand new to Built Bar. But either way, you can go to BuiltBar.com and you can find out your favorite flavor. Here's how. You can order a mixed box where you'll get 2 of each of the 9 flavors and then you can try them all. But here's the great thing. Not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're healthy too. Most of the flavors have 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 grams of net carbs. So order today to get the raspberry or the mint brownie or whatever you may like. So go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your first order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. And today's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is also brought to you by BetOnline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Now, we've got baseball season in full swing. You can track all the action at BetOnline, and I don't think many of you would bet that Mickey Janis would have been called up by this point by the Orioles, but here he is in the big leagues. But it's not just baseball action you can bet on. You can get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including UFC and MMA action, and then the NBA and NHL, which are both full swing in the playoffs into the conference finals. So before the next pitch, tip-off, or puck drop, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today, and you can receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. So obviously the big news of the day is the Orioles calling up Mickey Janis, adding a 33-year-old knuckleballer to their roster who will make his major league debut and DFAing Max Scherzer. But there were some smaller Orioles news and notes that came from Tuesday. I wanted to get them to you here at the end of the pod before we go. Did want to start with Cesar Valdez. We talked about him a little bit on yesterday's episode, the Orioles sending him to the 10-day injured list with a lower back sprain. Brandon Hyde talked on Tuesday before the game about that Cesar Valdez injury. He said he just felt it a little bit during his last outing, called it not serious, according to Madison Sports' Rock Cabaco. He said maybe 10 days to maybe 2 weeks at most, so hopefully that Cesar Valdez can get that figured out. On another injury front, in terms of Orioles pitchers, Bruce Zimmerman, Brandon Hyde updating, he expects Bruce to be out 2 to 3 more weeks possibly. And you remember it was last Friday that he went on the injured list for the Orioles. And so it could be, you know, in total, as much as a month maybe that Zimmerman would miss. And, you know, we've talked about without Zimmerman and Means, you know, you could argue that at one point this year, that's the top two Orioles starters in the rotation. You don't have them right now. Maybe Mickey Janis helps out a little bit there. Obviously, Thomas Eshelman was called up and did a solid job on Friday, but we will see. Hopefully Zimmerman can overcome that injury. Other news and notes, Alek Manoah has received a 5-game suspension, and he was fined as well as Major League Baseball determined that he intentionally threw at Michael Franco over the weekend when the brawl ensued between the Orioles and the Blue Jays after the O's had hit back-to-back home runs off of Manoah. The very next pitch to the very next batter, Franco, fastball high and tight, luckily hit him in the shoulder, didn't get up towards the head area. Benches cleared. Brandon Hyde was visibly upset. And, you know, you can never really prove if there was intent most of the time, but after back-to-back homers, where that pitch was, the fact that it came literally the pitch after the two homers, you have to think it was intentional. That cannot be in the game. It needs to get out of the game. Honestly, though, a 5-game suspension, you know, Manoah's maybe missing one start, but really you could just push him back. And you know, in the end here, he'll probably miss one start for the Blue Jays. That's it. Needs to be a harder punishment than that. The Blue Jays manager, Charlie Montoyo, he received a 1-game suspension. He served the suspension on Tuesday night, but Manoah is appealing the suspension. But baseball's got to come down. He's throwing a fastball near a guy's head. Just got to come down harder than that. A little bit more Orioles news and notes before we do get to the preview of today's game. About some former Orioles, actually. A couple guys, unfortunately, getting released from minor league contracts. The first was Dwight Smith Jr., who had been with the Cincinnati Reds in AAA since the Orioles released him last year, DFA'd him. It was not going well for Dwight Smith Jr. at the AAA level with Cincinnati. Just was not hitting, and his stats were looking kind of similar to what they were really with the Orioles, you know, especially in 2020 when he was not having a good year. The Reds have released Dwight Smith Jr., so he is now a free agent, hoping that he catches on somewhere. Obviously, a great guy to have on your team, but, you know, at AAA Louisville in the Cincinnati organization, 36 games, hitting just .220 with a .327 on base, 5 doubles, 1 homer, 34 strikeouts in 36 games. Smith now a free agent. And another former Oriole who has been released is Wade LeBlanc, who actually, after the Orioles DFA'd him earlier this season, he had signed with the St. Louis Cardinals. He had pitched in AAA for just a little bit with them. Then he was released by the Cardinals. Then he signed a minor league deal with the Texas Rangers after that. And he was also with Milwaukee for a little bit this year. So he's been with 4 organizations this year. He did actually pitch in the big leagues with St. Louis for 2 games this year. But his latest team was the Texas Rangers. He was actually really good in 3 AAA starts, 19 strikeouts, just 5 runs and 3 walks in 18 innings, had a 2.50 ERA. Seemed like it was working out for the 36-year-old left-hander, but he was released by the Rangers. And then 2 other guys who the Orioles just released a couple of days ago from their minor league teams. One of them is Wilby Santiago, who the Orioles drafted in the minor league phase of the Rule 5 draft. They released him last week. He signed a minor league deal with the Minnesota Twins. And then J.C. Encarnacion, who, of course, had been with the Orioles since he was traded to Baltimore in the Kevin Gausman trade from the Braves. They released him last week. He has signed an independent ball with the York Revolution up in York, Pennsylvania. He will play for former Oriole Lou Ford, who is still the manager for the Revolution. So those two guys, good for them finding new homes. But that's kind of the other Orioles news and notes of the day. But do want to preview this final game of the series. Orioles and Astros game three is tonight at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Again, another 7.05 p.m. Eastern time start. For the Astros, it's going to be Jose Urquidy, who is going to be getting the start here in Game 3 for Houston. The 26-year-old right-hander, making his 13th appearance of the year, has a 3.65 ERA this year, 60 strikeouts in 69 innings for Urquidy, who is coming off of back-to-back really good starts, including his last one against the White Sox, 7 innings, 2 runs on 4 hits, 5 Ks, and 1 walk. Urquidy is going to go up against Thomas Eshelman, who's going to make his second start of the season for the Orioles. Remember, he was called up on Friday to replace Bruce Zimmerman on the roster and in the rotation. And Eshelman was solid on Friday night against the Blue Jays. 4 2/3 innings, 1 run, 3 hits, 3 Ks, and 1 walk. He'll look to build off of that against his former organization, the org that drafted him, the Houston Astros. So that'll be game three of the series. And then tomorrow, the Orioles start a new series. It's the Blue Jays again, but this time they are going to Buffalo to start a 4-game series with the Blue Jays. We will preview that series when we get back here with you on tomorrow's episode. Also, we'll, of course, recap Game 3 of the series here between the Orioles and the Astros, and I'll be chatting a little bit about my experience at the Bowie game, heading to Prince George's Stadium to check out the Bowie Bay Sox for the first time tonight. Blaine Knight is on the mound for Bowie, and we'll talk about a bit what I saw from some of the AA guys from tonight's game. But that's all coming up on tomorrow's episode. But until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.